Support for NHPR's The Exchange podcast comes from you, our listeners, and from the New Hampshire Chiropractic Association, an organization of professionals providing a non-invasive, non-surgical approach to healthcare, tailoring treatment plans to meet individuals' needs. Learn more at nhchiropractic.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Casey McDermott, in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's been 1 year to the day since the first case of COVID-19 was reported in New Hampshire, and it's been a little over 2 months since the first COVID-19 vaccines arrived in the state. Since then, more than 230,000 people have received at least one dose of these vaccines. That's according to CDC data. That's a little less than one-fifth of the state's population. The state's getting a little under 30,000 first doses each week, according to state officials, and while most are being distributed through state run sites for those over age 65, for those with qualifying medical conditions, healthcare workers, and first responders, 10% of New Hampshire's vaccine supply is being set aside specifically for residents who are more vulnerable to COVID-19. That includes communities of color, those experiencing homelessness or severe economic hardship, those who lack transportation, and others who might have trouble accessing the vaccine through the standard process. Today, we're taking a closer look at how this vaccine equity strategy is working out so far. And we want to hear from you. Have you been to a vaccine clinic in your community? How did it go? If you're having trouble navigating the vaccine program, where do you think everyone could be doing a better job making the process easier at the state or local level? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And we have a great panel of guests this morning. These are people who are working in their communities across the state to facilitate the equitable distribution of vaccines. First, we have Bobbi Bagley, the Director of Public Health and Community Services for Nashua. She's also a nurse who runs testing clinics and administers vaccines. We also have Ashley DeRocher. She's the COVID-19 Chief of Operations for Stratford County. She manages all COVID-19 operations, including planning for all vaccine clinic sites and equity allocation. Finally, we have Chris Van Bergen, Director of Workforce and Public Health Programs for North Country Health Consortium. She's also overseeing vaccine equity distribution in the northern part of the state. Welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And again, thank you all. And again, if you have questions about equity in vaccine access and you're listening today, we want to hear from you. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. You can join the conversation on Twitter or Facebook at NHPR Exchange, or you can call us at 1-800-892-6477. You know, I want to start this conversation at kind of a basic level. I know each of you, each of the guests today, is familiar with what it means to take an equitable approach to healthcare, but it might be helpful to spell that out a bit more for everyone else who's listening today. Bobbi, I wonder if we can start with you. When Nashua Public Health or other officials are talking about distributing vaccines with an eye toward equity, what does that mean?
Thank you for that question. It's a very important one. And what it means is that we take an approach that makes sure that everyone has access to the vaccination clinics, access to information, and to really ensure that there are no challenges or there are no barriers for everyone to get vaccinated. If they want to be vaccinated, have the information, be able to sign up for the vaccination clinic. So it's putting things in place that gives someone else a little bit of extra help to make sure that they can get what they need.
Chris and Ashley, I'd love to hear your thoughts as well. Let's start with Chris. What about in the North Country? How does your team take equity into account in your vaccine distribution?
Yeah, in the North Country, our equity challenges are primarily related to our rurality. So the North Country Public Health Region is the largest geographically in the state. We cover about a third of the state's total geography, but we're home to only 3.8% of the state's population. And more than half of our public health region is primarily forested lands. White Mountain National Forest sits squarely within our boundaries. And in some cases, we have between 0 and 15 people per square mile. So for our folks, their challenge is really about distance and geography. first and foremost. We do have a highway. I-93 does run into the North Country, but it terminates in Littleton, which is in the southwestern corner of our territory. So for the large part, residents of the North Country really only travel on secondary and tertiary roads. We have to travel through mountain passes to get to the rest of the state, and weather and poverty impact access to transportation to healthcare hubs around our region. We often speak of the North Country as one region, but in truth, we're more like five sub-regions that are, for healthcare purposes, located around the five hospitals within COAS and Northern Grafton County.
Wow. And Ashley, what about you? How are you taking this into account in your region?
Sure. And I'm really glad that Chris mentioned rurality, because Stratford County is unique in that we have sort of these very rural areas and populations, but then we also have these more dense areas, the Tri-City region, Dover, Rochester, Somersworth. So those, you know, kind of juggling both of those challenges with, you know, a pretty large population of people. I think when we started planning, we were looking at, you know, anticipating vaccinating around 25 to 30,000 people. So we have our rural populations, and we also have, you know, some groups, you know, we have older adults, we have people that have access challenges. So, you know, how are the people in the, you know, the sort of more northern rural tier going to be able to transport down? We have a very large Indonesian population. We have a lot of communities of color, people that experience poverty, low income individuals. So really the biggest success that we've had in, you know, really making sure that we're providing an equitable distribution and information, thank you, Bobby, for mentioning the information piece, is working with partners in our community, organizations that have relationships with, you know, these gatekeepers in the communities that know their needs and that can really, you know, work with us to work with them. Our partnerships are our power here in our region, and we've really seen that with our vaccine distribution, especially as it relates to providing equitable vaccines.
And I know, you know, from following the work that you've all been doing throughout this pandemic, that, you know, this concept of thinking of equity in your response is not new to the issue of vaccine distribution. Bobby, I know this is something that you and your team have been really trying to take into account throughout the pandemic when it comes to testing and other elements of your response. Before we dive into the vaccine side of things, I was wondering if you could share a little bit more about how some of those principles that you've learned from the earlier stages of, you know, your response to the COVID-19 pandemic have carried over into your thinking about this new phase?
Oh, yes, Casey, thank you for that that question. And it's really interesting, as you've heard from Ashley and Chris talk about, you know, the intersectionality of the challenges across our region. And so you mentioned the language, the race, ethnicity, transportation, lower income, you know, the diversity across the urban versus the rural area. So in Nashua, and in the greater Nashua region, you know, there's 90,000 of our population here in Nashua, and our region covers about 208,000. Some of the work earlier, prior to getting to the vaccination and how we landed, you know, in the success that we've had with these clinics was based upon how we actually laid out our testing clinics, you know, and so we knew that we were gonna have to make provisions for access for everyone to get tested, because there's barriers for individuals to be able to get, you know, just, you know, around, you know, to get that done. And so we took into account any transportation limitations folks would have, languages, you know, as well as some of the fears that folks would have because of past experience, either with government, you know, or with the public health system, or information that folks had. And so we did our due diligence to make sure that we could meet people where they were, by making sure that we were in the community, that we were accessible either by bus route, you know, or by walking, through our vaccination clinics, sorry, our testing clinics. And we learned from that experience what we needed to make sure that we had in place strategy-wise for our vaccination clinics. We were able to work with our partners. As Ashley mentions, it's really important to have a strong partner base, you know, when you're doing these efforts, because our response has to be a community-wide response. So it's not just public health doing it by itself. It's not just our hospitals doing it by itself, but it's all of us doing it together with the community as well. So we brought on community health workers early on that could help get to boots on the ground, get into our neighborhoods, knock on doors, let people know that we were there to do testing, offering testing. And when individuals saw folks that looked like them, that could understand where they were coming from, it was easy to build trust to allow for that to happen. And then that kind of segued into, now we're back, now offering something that's going to really help save lives through vaccinations, right? And so we established those trusting relationships, built those strong ties with our partner relationships, identified some of the areas where we knew we were going to have to make some measures to be able to meet people where they were. And I think that led to a lot of the success that we've had because we were using that equity framework.
That's great. And I think that's a really good segue into talking about that equity framework within the three-phased or the vaccine timeline that New Hampshire has laid out. And Chris and Ashley, I'd love to hear a little bit more from each of you about that as we get into the kind of details about the vaccine strategy. So just to make sure that our listeners are all on the same page, right now we are in phase 1B of New Hampshire's three-phased vaccine timeline. So first, we had vaccines that went to high-risk health workers, first responders, residents and staff at long-term care facilities. Then in late January, the state opened up access to those 65 and older, those with certain high-risk health conditions and their caregivers, residents and staff of facilities for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, correctional officers, and some others. And that's where we are now. But as part of that phase 1B, the state also started making a portion of vaccines available for this equity allocation that we've been talking about. I talked to Dr. Beth Daly, Chief of New Hampshire's Bureau of Infectious Disease Control, last week about this equity allocation. At the time, she said that a lot of these clinics have been happening in areas in low-income senior housing facilities, also homeless shelters, and other locations and communities that have been identified at higher risk for COVID-19 vulnerabilities.
They've also done work with homeless populations, people experiencing homelessness, and then some of them have set up some clinics working with community partners in areas that are deemed vulnerable using the COVID Vulnerability Index, the CVI.
As of last Tuesday, Dr. Daly said that there were about 44 events scheduled to reach roughly 4,400 people. She told WMUR over the weekend that to date, 61 events had been scheduled, and they're hoping to reach 6,100 people in this upcoming week. I was wondering, Ashley, if you could talk a little bit about that index that Dr. Daly was talking about. How does that apply when it comes to deciding how to hold these clinics and how to do vaccine outreach in your community?
Yeah, absolutely. So in addition to the COVID Vulnerability Index, which is an amazing tool, we also use the U.S. Census data. So it lets us sort of pinpoint by geographic area which communities are sort of more vulnerable. And it was interesting when this data came out from, the state, we looked at it and we said, oh, wow, this is where we're already planning our clinics. So it was just very validating for us to sort of look at the data and say, we're right on the mark and we know where we're going. So some of these areas were Somersworth and Rochester, and they were kind of right directly in the center of town where these housing authorities were. And we were already working with our emergency management directors who have been amazing partners to sort of say, this is our mission and this is what we're doing. So those vulnerability indexes and that data really sort of helped us validate what are already, existing strategies, but it also added some depth as well.
Were there any locations on the index or in that, in the information that you received from the state that were new to you, or was it mostly lining up with the strategy that you already had in place?
Yeah, it was mostly already lining up, which was really great for us to see because, we knew we were on the mark and we were also able to expand a little bit and say, okay, well, what are some of these areas that maybe aren't identified by census tract? We know that homeless individuals and some lower income individuals won't maybe necessarily be counted within those data. So we were able to say, how are we going to, work with those populations? And we've already been able to do that. Most of our homeless center, they're going to be receiving, or our homeless communities, some of them are receiving their second vaccinations this week.
And Chris, what about you in the North Country? What are the kind of metrics that you're looking at in that index? And how do you use that to apply to where you're holding the vaccine outreach in your communities?
So we've actually used the bulk of our equity allocation to address access to vaccines for individuals in age-restricted housing. One of the things that we know about the North Country through things like community health rankings or county health rankings is that proportionately, though we have a small population in the North Country, proportionately, we have more elderly. We have more people burdened by chronic disease. Our education rates tend to be lower in the North Country, and poverty rates are higher. Median income is lower. And so for us, as I mentioned earlier, the equity concern really centers around our elderly population who are struggling maybe with technology. Because of our rurality, we have significant pockets in the region that do not have reliable access to the internet. Poverty contributes to a lack of access to devices to connect to the internet. So some of the systems that have been put in place statewide for registering for a vaccine, for example, become incredibly cumbersome and difficult to navigate for members of our communities here in the North Country. So we've actually taken the approach that really reaching those elderly folks or people with chronic disease burdens that qualify in 1B is a really important equity issue for us because we have more of them. Our federally qualified healthcare centers are reflecting that 45 to 50% of their patient panels in some cases are individuals who are eligible for 1B vaccinations. And so this is a time in the North Country where we have perhaps our heaviest lift from a vaccination effort perspective. So we've used those equity allocations to do things like deploy mobile strike teams into age-restricted housing complexes, into our residences for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and really make sure that the vaccine reaches them so that they don't have to reach a vaccine clinic. And I'd just like to echo a little bit of what Bobby and Ashley have talked about in terms of the high value of partnerships in this work and making sure that our residents have access to testing and vaccination. As happens with anything as important as a mass vaccination effort, resources are generally allocated on a per capita basis. And it makes perfectly good sense to allocate our resources that way. We certainly would not expect that the North Country receive more than we need. By any stretch. But our challenge becomes penetration of those resources into our region. Generally speaking, as the state has talked about allocating vaccination resources, including human resources, to things like fixed sites, we have seen that those allocations happen on per capita. So the North Country was originally established to have a single fixed site for what effectively amounted to a third of the state's geography, and that fixed site operated part-time. And that, you know, the numbers made sense in terms of the size of our population, but it was located in the southwestern corner of our region. And that effectively meant that our residents who lived in Pittsburgh, for example, along the Canadian border, were looking at driving over 2 hours to get a vaccine. 2 hours each way to get a vaccine. So even in the 1A category, when we were trying to vaccinate EMS, for example, and law enforcement officers, many of our EMS crews and law enforcement teams in the North Country are not only small, but they share staff from one community to the next. And so asking someone to drive 2 hours each way for a vaccine meant really significantly taking important emergency resources out of their service area. So we saw partnerships develop very quickly to pull those resources deeper into the region. So for our 1A clinics, for example, most of our public health network allocation really pushed further into the region to EMS teams in the Colebrook area or Berlin-Borum in the Androscoggin Valley so that they could hold local clinics and have folks driving, you know, upwards of a half an hour at most rather than 2 hours to access a vaccine. And their support has continued into the 1B period. So we're seeing things like our fire and EMS departments in the Androscoggin Valley lending staff to travel door to door in age-restricted housing to deliver the public health allocations.
I am so sorry to cut you off there because that all sounds really interesting. We do have to go to a break. We're going to pick right up where we left off when we return. Again, bring in your questions. We want to hear from you at The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Casey McDermott in for Laura Kanoy. Today, we're looking at how New Hampshire is working to ensure equitable distribution of the COVID-19 vaccine. And we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on these challenges? Have you run into hurdles trying to get the vaccine for any reason? Let us know where you think, you know, the state or local officials could be doing a better job of this outreach. Let us know where it's worked really well, too. We want to hear those success stories. Send us an email at exchange@nhpr.org, or you can get in touch with us on Facebook or call 800-892-6477. Again, our guests today are Bobby Bagley, Director of Public Health and Community Services in Nashua, Ashley DeRocher, Chief of COVID-19 Operations for Stratford County, and Chris Van Bergen, who directs workforce and public health programs for the North Country. Right before the break, Chris, you were telling us about some of the kind of mobile outreach efforts that you were doing in the North Country that involved, you know, first responders, other emergency personnel. I wonder, just because we cut you off, if we could have you just pick back up there, if there was anything else that you wanted to mention.
You know, just to kind of cap that out is that after we saw our great partnerships start to bring vaccines into our subregions for the 1A tier and make sure that our emergency personnel were well vaccinated, what followed were continued partnerships with our local hospitals. And so as 1B has really gotten underway, we've worked closely with the state to actually discontinue the fixed site that had been staffed by the New Hampshire National Guard so that we'd no longer have a clinic operating at the Armory in Littleton that had originally been planned. And instead, our vaccines are being delivered in partnership with four hospitals in the North Country. So rather than having a single fixed site that everyone has to come to, we now have four fixed sites effectively around the North Country, and they're operating part-time as well, but they're close, they're local. And so our community residents are now receiving vaccines from teams that they know and recognize as their usual healthcare providers. They're happening in partnership between hospitals and federally qualified healthcare centers, hospitals and EMS. And it's really given us the opportunity to make sure that that appropriately allocated resource truly penetrates a very large geographic region. And as Bobby and Ashley have said, that would not be possible without incredibly strong partnerships and significant commitment to community on the part of our local partners. Mm-hmm.
I do want to hear a little bit more about the outreach in Nashua. And Bobby, I think we have one of your colleagues on the line right now to share a little bit more about how those vaccine sites are being handled in the greater Nashua Public Health Region. Patty Crooker, welcome to The Exchange. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
So I would love to hear a little bit more from you about what we just heard from Chris. How are you approaching, you and your team, you know, the location or the outreach of these equity clinics in the greater Nashua region?
Well, one of the first things we did was look at the COVID vulnerability index and our social vulnerability index for our region and sort of identify where those census tracts that have the higher vulnerability are, and that's where we've been targeting our clinics so far. So doing outreach to organizations that are within those areas, organizations that serve the populations we're looking for, it's really been one of the keys, I think, to our success is to reach out to those organizations and make connections and try to have them be the vaccine ambassadors for us, where they're talking to their clients, their residents, and getting them more education on vaccine efficacy and safety to reduce that hesitancy, and then connecting them with our community health workers who are from many different cultures and can maybe have deeper conversations with them about vaccine and address any concerns they have, and then encourage them to come to our clinics. So that's how we've reached out to a lot of our racial and ethnic groups, as well as low-income groups. So we've worked with places that provide emergency shelter and transitional housing and had them invite their clients and residents to clinics. We've done a lot, as others have said, with some of our seniored and disabled housing, getting clinics put together for them where they're at. They have lacking transportation. We just met earlier this week with our transit department on how we can assist folks in getting to clinic and assist the transit department in making that possible for them. You know, what can we do to break down some of the barriers transit has in order to pick up individuals and bring them to clinics so they can get vaccinated. And we've also been, like Bobby has mentioned, doing a lot of education just for the community in general, trying to put the word out there that people can access vaccine, that vaccine is safe, and that we can answer questions for them. We do also run our standby list, which is not just for our clinics, and I know all the public health regions do this in some capacity, so it's important to for people to know. Now, the standby lists are for when they have extra vaccine at one of our clinics or the fixed site, and we still have to meet those eligibility guidelines. But for people that have appointments more than 3 weeks out or people that have really had a hard time making appointments, we want to make sure that we're, again, taking those barriers away from them and being able to ensure that they get vaccinated.
Yeah, that's all really, really helpful, Patty. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about how you manage the, you know, the registration for these clinics, how you balance, you know, providing access to the people that need it and the people who may not know about these clinics to begin with, while also taking into account the fact that the vaccine supply is still rather limited at this point, and there is a degree of, you know, conservation that needs to happen to ensure that it can get to everyone that needs it.
Absolutely. And it's very tricky. We, you know, we're constantly tweaking how we do it, and we're constantly modifying the tools that we use. So because there's so many people working on outreach and connecting with our vulnerable populations and getting them signed up for clinic appointments, we have to use a shared tool, correct? So we use a Google Sheet, and we have a certain number of appointments listed, and they're in time blocks. And so once that's filled up, there's also a column to say that if the appointments are confirmed or not. So we cap that at a certain amount. Now we're getting into a trickier stage where we have to start thinking next week about people coming back for their second doses for those community clinics. So we have to juggle the amount of first dose appointments and second dose appointments that we have. And so then on top of that, when people come down to the clinic itself, we don't publicize broadly when we're holding the clinics, although word has gotten out because we've been at the same site for a while. So we're looking into some new sites now to sort of rotate that and take the burden off that one location. But we also screen them when they get in. So if people come in and they don't meet criteria, whether they were signed up and confirmed or not, they are asked to leave, which is never a fun conversation to have with somebody. But we do need to conserve vaccine, like you said, and we do need to follow state guidance. So that's sort of one of my jobs at clinic, usually for the community clinics, is to have those conversations with people, but also ensure them that when it is their time for vaccine, then we will make sure that they get it. And we do keep their information if they've already provided it to us, or if they want me to hold on to their information, I can do that. But we do need to prioritize, and even when we have those extra doses, like I said, we're calling people down to get them that meet eligibility. If we're in a pinch, like this weekend, we did a pop-up clinic where we vaccinated 247 people at a clinic that we set up with less than 24 hours notice. And we still provided the majority of those vaccines, the good majority, like 95% of them, to people that 100% met guidelines. And at the end, where the vaccine was getting close to expiration, we actually still kept the distribution very close to eligibility. So I think we were doing people that were like over 60 maybe at that point. Mm-hmm. But that's per state guidance because you don't want to throw vaccine away.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So it is a very fine line.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all really interesting. The one thing that caught my ear is it's amazing how much of our lives are run on Google Docs these days. I know at NHPR, so much of what I do lives in Google spreadsheets. So it's funny to hear that is also powering a lot of the work that you guys are doing in the communities as well. Thank you so much, Patty, for joining us this morning. I appreciate it.
Have a great day. Thank you.
We also have someone else from Nashua, as I understand it, on the line. Lisa Vasquez, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Lisa, are you there? We may have lost Lisa, but actually, real quick, I think we're going to go back to Bobby just to follow up on some of the things that Patty was talking about in her segment. you've talked too about building those strong partnerships with the community to do a lot of the outreach, to get the word out about these clinics, and also to facilitate some of the conversations about, the concerns that people may have or questions that people may have about the vaccines. I spoke with a few people at your clinic that you held on Friday who were doing some of that facilitation or interpretation on site at the clinics. But I'd love to hear a little bit more from you about how you're approaching the community outreach, specifically when it comes to immigrant or refugee populations or other populations within Nashua who may not speak English primarily as their first language.
Well, thank you, Casey, for that. So what we've been doing with our populations that where English may not be their first language is working, again, like I said, with our community partners. We reached out to the Adult Learning Center, which is one of the places where when our immigrants or refugees come in, they go there for their English language classes. And so those connections are already there. So by reaching out to that organization, it was a matter of them connecting individuals to our community health workers who could then speak to them in their first languages and then answer their questions, help provide them with sound information about the vaccine, about the efficacy of the vaccines, and about why it's important to get vaccinated. And so we wanted to be able to address any vaccine hesitancy that would be in those population groups in their first language so they could understand it. And then also speaking with people that are what sometimes we will call cultural brokers or folks that come from the same culture. It's important to engage people from the community that people can relate to. So hearing stuff from, us in public health or, folks that work at agencies, they trust us. But then when they can actually hear from someone in their population group that they trust, it leads more credence to it as well. And so it was really important for us to make those connections with our community health workers, with those organizations that serve those populations to get folks out to get vaccinated. And so initially we thought we were gonna have a lot more vaccine hesitancy than what we've been experiencing in those racial and ethnic minority populations, again, because of the historic things that have happened in our society that brought up a lot of mistrust or distrust, and there's a lot of misinformation that's out there. But because we've made those intentional efforts of meeting people where they are, making sure they could speak with individuals, we haven't had that problem at all. And in fact, our clinics keep growing larger and larger each time we offer them. But we're really excited about the fact that we've been able to put certain strategies in place that then reduce some of those barriers and some of those challenges that would come from not having information or not being able to speak the language or not having someone that's trusted actually interface with individuals. We've been able to accomplish that. And so we're looking forward to getting as much of our 10% allocation that the state provides across all of our state into those who are most vulnerable and have been impacted by COVID disproportionately, as we've seen in our data.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring in the voice of someone who was helping out with that at one of the clinics in Nashua on Friday. This is Ira Munoz, who was providing some translation for individuals who showed up at Nashua's vaccine clinic on Friday.
It's better if they are explaining Spanish so they understand that a Spanish speaker can understand what they mean, so they feel more comfortable with the vaccination process. There's always misinterpretation as well, so we try to clarify all those questions for them right away, right in the spot.
Ira was also saying that, Bobby, as you said, that it's really important to combat some of the misinformation that's out there. And this is what she was saying, that she tries to communicate with people whenever she's talking to them at the vaccine clinics.
It's important to get the information from reliable resources. Try to not listen to rumors or Facebook or any social media. If it's not official, I wouldn't believe it. So trying to get advice from the people that really knows what they are doing is what I would advise.
And I want to go to someone else who's doing some more work around this area in another part of the state. Sandra, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I'd love to hear a little bit more about the work that you're doing in your region.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thank you so much. We have, so since Friday, so Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so these past three days, 215 Indonesians have received vaccines. So we are so uh, was the, uh, I'm so thankful. And of course, my friends, the Indonesians also are so thankful. And so what we did is we helped them. My office, the Indonesian community support, we helped the Indonesian with translations. We translated the form in Bahasa Indonesia. We helped them one by one, especially those who do not speak English. And also we let the Indonesian who are, some of them, actually many of them, do not feel comfortable to use their own address. So I let them to use our office address, email, and things like that. So I thank the CAP, the Community Action Partners. We worked together with the local clinic, and yes, 215 Indonesians received the vaccine.
Wow!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Sandra, just to let our listeners know, where are you doing this work in New Hampshire?
The CAP office, the Community Action Partners office in Dover, New Hampshire. And also the first day we had this vaccination at my office building, the McConnell Center in Dover.
Great. Well, that's really interesting. And Ashley, I know you were talking a little bit earlier about the Indonesian community in Stafford County. Sandra, I wonder if there's anything else that you think is important to let our listeners know about things that you've learned or things that have been really successful in terms of the outreach that you've done in the Indonesian community so far in your part of the state.
Well, I don't know if somebody already mentioned this, but people, the Indonesian always, they many of them think, oh, this is Antichrist and blah blah blah, so don't come. But so you have as a pastor, I'm a pastor, a UCC pastor. So I have to explain to them, and I have to be like, I have to let them know I got mine, and I am a pastor, so I'm not, and this is not about religion, and I had to, and my friends, not just, I mean, our office, the volunteers, we tried to, to reach them out and to explain to them, and it's not easy, but,
it sounds like
215, mm-hmm. and that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Sandra, it sounds like that's a really good example, too, of what everyone's been talking about this morning in terms of identifying community partners like you mm-hmm. across the state who can, just talk directly to people about the concerns that they have and help put them at ease about some of the questions that they may have about
That's
the vaccine.
Right.
Thank you so much, Sandra. I really appreciate you lending your voice to this conversation this morning. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment to talk more about vaccine equity outreach in New Hampshire. Again, if you have thoughts on this, if you have questions, we would love to hear from you as well. You can email exchange@nhpr.org, join us on Facebook, or call 800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Casey McDermott, sitting in for Laura Knoy this morning as we talk about vaccine access, and in particular, breaking down some of the barriers that can exist around ensuring that everyone gets protected from COVID-19. We have another person calling in this morning. I want to thank everyone who's lending their voices to today's conversation. This is definitely something that benefits from a wide variety of perspectives, so it's great to hear from so many people from all across the state. I think we have Lisa on the line now from Concord. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Casey. My name is Lisa Bodwin. I'm the executive director of ABLE New Hampshire, and it's really exciting that you all are focusing on vulnerable Granite Staters, and thanks for taking my call. I wanted to add that an important element in the conversation in vaccine equity is resolving the glitches in the registration process. In the case of the disability community, the system was designed without bearing in mind the needs of people with disabilities, while seniors could just simply register. So the lack of clarity and consistency in vaccine guidance by what ostensibly becomes the gatekeepers of the vaccine is leaving behind our most vulnerable members of the disability community. And that's been very problematic. One of the challenges at the front end is that doctor's offices were not given adequate lead time to prepare for this verification process that the disability community has to go through in order to get registered. So this barrier put vulnerable people with disabilities not only to be delayed in registering for the vaccine, but it actually ended up putting the disability community at the back of the registration line. So massage therapists have now completed their second vaccine, and there are families with children and adults with Down syndrome across New Hampshire who still have not had an email giving them the opportunity to register. So that's a problem. So there are families and adults who don't who know that they actually qualify for a vaccine, yet they have not been able to obtain a verification from their healthcare provider. Many individuals can't even confirm if their name has been uploaded to the master list in Concord. And many unpaid caregivers have either been denied or been given the runaround. And the unpaid caregivers are typically parents. And because New Hampshire doesn't have a state institution, a very tiny percentage of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities live in a group home or institutional setting. So that makes homes the equivalent of an institutional setting, and these unpaid caregivers of people with significant disabilities or the medically vulnerable, they are still waiting. Many are still waiting, and it's depending on where you live or who your doctor is, you don't know when or if or how your name has been uploaded. It's been very stressful. Mm-hmm. And in Massachusetts, Casey, citizens are self-attesting that they belong to a group. And I just wonder why it is that New Hampshire can't be allowing citizens with disabilities and other vulnerable citizens to self-attest.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that this question came up actually at a press conference with state officials, the governor, Commissioner Lori Chabanet last week, and it sounded like that they were aware of it, that they were trying to work on some solutions to it. What do you think of the response that state officials have given on questions around the access and the issues that you've identified?
Well, I appreciate that question so much, Casey. I was extremely disappointed to hear Commissioner Chabanet suggest that the large part of the problem was that families of medically vulnerable citizens were in disagreement with their healthcare providers. That is not the crux. The crux of the problem is that we are in a healthcare crisis. Everyone is working as hard as they can, and the COVID operations folks have not been responsive to installing solutions to the identified problems. If we had clear messaging and guidance to 211 call staff, as well as healthcare providers and families, if we had the same, basically, here's how to register list, and that hasn't happened, and we've been in that conversation with the governor's office and with Public Health Service for 4 weeks now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will certainly continue to follow these issues and continue to follow up with state officials to ask further questions about, some of the things that, Lisa, you brought up this morning. Thank you so much for joining us and for ensuring that we were keeping that element of this as part of the discussion today.
Thank you.
Chris, I want to go back to you for a moment. Have you heard any of the concerns, either the ones that Lisa brought up specifically or other concerns around access to the vaccine for individuals with disabilities or other conditions that may, make it hard for them to go through the standard vaccination process that is set up in New Hampshire?
Yeah, I think one of the very real challenges that we're hearing about in our region is physical access to vaccines. We know that, for example, people who are mobility challenged already have challenges in terms of leaving their homes, finding transportation that accommodates what devices or equipment they may be using, and then being able to access buildings, things like that. We've seen some nice innovation happening with our Tri-County Community Action Program, actually, to help ensure that individuals who are mobility challenged have the transportation that is truly helpful to them at no cost in order to get them to vaccination clinics. We are hearing some concern from some parents about how if a parent, one parent in the home may qualify in tier 1B for their own personal health status, but another parent in the home does not, and they are shared parents to a child who may be vulnerable because their child's disability makes it hard for the child to perhaps comply with mask guidance or physical distancing, or they may need services that require staff to be very close to them, helping with activities of daily living. And I think it is challenging to not have a coordinated and targeted plan at the state level for making sure that for each individual who experiences a disability, there's a way for them to access the vaccine. One of the other things that we're hearing quite a bit is just the very real challenges navigating the 211 system. And also people being concerned that even after they've selected a vaccine, let's assume they've gotten through the 211 system, they've gotten their VAMS registration, they've gone online and they've picked a date and a time for their vaccination appointment, really needing some level of reassurance that that appointment is actually going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then not being able to get their questions answered because each time you call 211, you speak to a different person and they may have a very different understanding of what resources exist in which areas. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the things we're hearing about in the North Country. Most of them, again, come back to the challenges for the elderly, perhaps. We hear things like recommendations that people can get earlier appointments at Plymouth, for example. But mm-hmm. if you're a North Country resident, getting to Plymouth means driving through Franconia Notch. Then in the winter, that becomes a scary proposition if you're 85 and you don't really feel comfortable driving anyway. So there are lots of different ways to look at how access can be challenging. I think we have a lot of folks who may not perceive themselves to be living with disability, but in fact, disability experts may say that they are, mm-hmm. and should require or should have the benefit of additional assistance.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, I would love to hear your perspective as well, particularly on, some of the kind of transportation challenges or just the challenges of reaching people with the vaccine who may, for whatever reason, be homebound, whether that's having trouble, getting in a car and driving to a vaccine site, or, they may have other conditions that may make it difficult for them to leave the house. The state last week announced an expansion of a pilot program that they've been running to reach New Hampshire's homebound population. How is that working in the greater Nashua region?
Stacey, thank you for that question. I really appreciate the earlier caller, Lisa's concerns around some of the challenges that we face. This is really, as we know, COVID, has really challenged us across just every system we could think of. And so as we roll out these different strategies, we really want, and I really want to impress upon the listeners, how challenging this is because we have such a diverse population that we're trying to serve and get vaccination out to. We've strengthened our efforts through our public health network services regions. The state has supported us with funding, this 10% allocation, which allows for us to do the best that we can, to reach everyone. So one of the things that we're looking at with regards to those that are homebound and those with transportation issues, you're going to use certain different strategies and a lot of innovation. And so right now, when we do get a call from someone that says, I'm homebound, but I fit, you know, 1B and I want to get vaccinated. Right now, our staff has been able to go into those people's homes and do the vaccinations and do the observation period time as well. Our transit department got in contact with us to try and figure out ways and strategies. In fact, we just met yesterday of what services they're going to provide to be able to pick people up and get them to the vaccination clinics. You know, so it's an all hands on deck approach, and everyone is thinking of different ways in which the services that they provide can support these efforts. The partnerships with our organizations, again, it's key because there are services that are being provided to populations that have members that might be homebound. When we hear from them, as Patty Crooker, and she's still on the call, we collect the information, we collect the names, and then we're setting up a process where we can get to those individuals. We have a meeting that's coming up that we're gonna have with our home health and hospice. They were waiting to hear from the state on what that strategy was gonna look like. We'll be meeting with them, and we're looking at bringing in our EMS or AMR to help support getting to those individuals as well. So, I mean, it's really complicated and it's complex. This is one of those mm-hmm. wicked problems that comes out of a pandemic, mm-hmm. right? And how do we move fast enough to get vaccine into as many arms as we can? Some of it, it's gonna take time. And I could hear, you know, the frustration that the earlier caller had, but we're all doing our best mm-hmm. with what we have to make sure that we get to address the needs of again, everyone in the state, because that's what equity is about, is making sure that everyone has access. And so we're all working, and you're hearing from, you know, Chris, from Ashley, you've heard from other folks of all the things that we're doing to make sure that we can get vaccine into the arms of everyone that qualifies for vaccinations. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take time, right? It's going to take some time. So we're hoping that people will have some patience with us, but do call us and let mm-hmm. us know what the issues are, because if you don't call us, we won't know.
Ashley, I would love to get your perspective on this, too. You were mentioning at the top of the show that, you know, Stratford is somewhat unique in that there are both rural and urban centers in your region. How are you addressing some of the access issues around either the homebound population or some of these other issues that we've been talking about most recently?
Yeah, absolutely. And I really, listening to Lisa, I just really empathize with their concerns and their frustration. And I just really wanted to speak to quickly, before I talk about what we've done, is we've worked with our local community health center, which is also the designated area agency that works with people that have disabilities. And they have been doing clinics every single week with their 1B qualifying folks. So they've been able to vaccinate people that have intellectual disabilities, older adults, and a lot of these individuals also have co-occurring mental health disorders. And they have been an integral partner in making sure that those people have vaccines. We're also working with Easter Seals, and Bobby also mentioned that we're also partnering with our state initiative to make sure that homebound individuals are taken care of. But again, and I also want to speak to that, you know, availability is not access, and that's what equity is. It's creating access. But the stories that we've heard from families and volunteers and people working within these settings is that, you know, they're working with a provider that they already feel safe with, they already feel comfortable with. So making sure that people aren't scared when they're receiving vaccine is also so crucial. To kind of handle that. So we actually are setting up our first clinic this week. We were actually busing in homebound individuals that have the ability to. We have a great partner, Coast Transportation Services. They're leveraging their resources to help sort of identify these people geographically and bus them in. So this is all over our region. So mm-hmm. we're kind of just starting to pilot this. We just sent it out to all of our emergency management directors. We have a few folks coming, but we're also working with our home health care providers as well. We'll be, I think, talking to them tomorrow to sort of work through how we're really going to pilot and work through this program. Yeah. And I also a huge shout out to our emergency manager, Mary Kerr, at the end of every clinic that she has. She is going out to homebound individuals' homes, vaccinating right in their home every single day, working all hours of the night to make sure that homebound individuals that really, really can't leave have access to a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. That really sounds like an all hands on deck. And I want to apologize. It sounded like we had a little bit of maybe an audio issue there. But I think that, Ashley, you gave us a really good sense overall about the, you know, the real team effort that's going into the vaccine outreach in your region of the state. I regret that we are wrapping up here. We only have a few minutes left. But just very briefly, I want to kind of end on, you know, one question. I'll go back to you, Bobby, for this. At this point, the state's equity allocation is set at 10%. Based on your experiences thus far, do you think that that's something that you would like to see the state increase as we move forward?
Well, you know what, Casey? What I would like to see is that it doesn't change. So as more vaccine comes in, that 10% is going to add up. So
got it.
What I would like is for it not to change.
That makes sense, definitely. And just very briefly, Chris, I wonder if you have any thoughts on that as well.
I would agree wholeheartedly with Bobby. I would hate to see it fall by any stretch. And I think as we continue to move forward into subsequent tiers, I also think it's really important to continue this conversation and remember that when we're talking about equity, it's about preventing people from getting left behind. And so it's easy to move into the next tier and talk about the exciting next group that has access to vaccines. But until we finish the previous tiers, there are still people left behind that we need to be working to reach.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will certainly invite all of our listeners today to continue the conversation with us. Please reach out to coronavirus@nhpr.org to share your questions and concerns. We certainly want to continue this conversation moving forward. Thank you to all of our guests today for being here. Chris Van Bergen from the North Country Health Consortium, Ashley DeRochers from the Stratford County Public Health Outreach, and Bobby Bagley from the City of Nashua Public Health. Today's show was produced by Exchange senior producer Ellen Grimm. Exchange listeners, again, you can follow up with us at exchange@nhpr.org. You can also get involved on our Twitter or Facebook at NHPR Exchange. Please feel free to reach out anytime. We love to hear from you, and we really appreciate all of those who included their voices in today's conversation. Thank you all for being with us today. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.